We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Irish Blooded says this, Ryan. I'm going to ask you this. Favorite sport to play and watch other than football? So it's kind of two questions, Ryan. What is yours?
I was like playing basketball growing up. I was actually pretty good at basketball at one point. I could shoot a little bit. And I mean, me and my buddies would just, you know, we didn't watch. I feel like it's changed so quick. I'm about to do like a grandpa thing, but like, oh man, we didn't watch TV growing up, you know, like, but like, honestly, like we were always out playing something. Like we would go up to this park named Aces near my house, like almost every day and just play, pick up basketball and, you know, just play for hours, you know? So basketball was definitely number one. Watching, see, when I was young, I used to like to watch baseball a ton when I was younger. And then I lost my love for it pretty quickly into my teenage years. So basketball is probably my answer for both. Honestly, I think basketball is very entertaining to watch and play.
As a kid, favorite sport to watch, I was big NBA and baseball. As I got older, I stopped watching baseball as much. I mean, excuse me, basketball as much. But, I mean, I was a child of the 80s in basketball. And whether it was – I mean, every Saturday you'd have a doubleheader, and almost every Saturday it was a Celtics game early and a Lakers game night, and I was watching both of them, you know. As I got older, you know what it is? The Piston era of basketball, just I hated, and I kind of stopped watching around then. And then the Bulls were just so dominant, it made the league not fun unless you were a Bulls fan. And I wasn't. I was a Celtics fan. So I just kind of stopped watching then.
And I forgot you were a Celtics fan.
Yeah, just never got back into it. I watched a little bit more. I watched a little bit more basketball the year that Paul Pierce and Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett were on the team. I enjoyed watching that team, but I just didn't enjoy the game as much anymore. Love college basketball. But I was a baseball guy up until about 4 or 5 years ago. And I just kind of, the game just kind of got a little bit, the whole analytics thing of walk, strikeout, home run, just kind of lost it for me. I think Rob Manfred is a god-awful commissioner.
He's awful. He's awful.
Like if you'd have told
the players would also agree with you that
he's awful. If you'd have told me that Roger Goodell and Adam Silver conspired to put someone in that job to ruin baseball, I'd have said, what would he have done different? You know? And then there was some other stuff that happened in the last 3 years. It just was like, okay, I'm done. But I just don't enjoy the game anymore, to be honest with you. So, baseball was a sport I loved to play growing up. Baseball was my best sport. Mm-hmm. As a kid, I loved playing baseball. I enjoyed playing basketball, but I liked playing basketball more just in the neighborhood than I did playing organized basketball.
Sure.
I didn't like plays, and I just give me the ball and let's go have some fun. You know, that was kind of it. And I'll tell you another, do you consider bowling a sport? Cause I was a really good bowler when I was a kid.
It's a nuance to that question,
I was all
man.
City when I was in the seventh and eighth grade.
So, you're all city. Huh?
Yeah. Uh-oh. Yeah. You have a plaque? I don't know. My mom has all that stuff, but I was the only middle school kid on cause the all city team, there's a tournament at the end of all the different leagues. The leagues were basically the alleys, you know, the mm-hmm. the bowling alleys. And I think it was only middle schooler on that. So I stopped bowling after the eighth grade. I joined a league with my wife and my in-laws when we lived in Colorado.
Yeah.
And I sucked at first, but like I had over 200 average the last maybe month. I actually got close to kind of close to 300 once. I just didn't bowl enough to have more, but I actually, I was perfect going into the 10th. I wasn't really paying attention. And then I looked up and I was like, dude, I got a shot for a 300. I think I've told the story before. So when I went up to the lane that next time, I was like,
jittery. Yeah.
I didn't hit the head pin on either shot. I went 6-0, bowled a 266. I was so disappointed in myself, but yeah.
One of my friends growing up, he was a really good bowler in high school. I think he had like a 230 something average in high school as a bowler. Yes, he was very good. But he could never get a 300 until we were like in our, I think he was like 24 when he has first one. And then he got like 11 in like 2 years, something like that. Like
a professional bowler?
No,
like
no,
those numbers, you'd think he'd be a pro bowler, man. Those are insane numbers.
He just kind of messes around with it now. So yeah.
Not professional. But I don't know if I'd call that a sport or not. So somebody asked if I bowled 20th Century. I bowled at Morio's is where I bowled. Now 20th Century is one of the places where the league turned. Like, so the way the tournament was is they would have different rounds at the different alleys. So there was like Northland and Morio's. 20th Century was one. I was, for whatever reason, 20th Century was the biggest alley in Lima. I was never very good there. Mm-hmm. I was good at Northland and at Morio's and places like that. There was another alley and I can't remember where it was, but yeah, I my league wasn't at 20th Century. So yeah.
I was also a really good discus thrower in track and field in high school.
Never did any of those. Yeah. Never did any of those.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk. But it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So here we go. Here's another one. So here's from Benjamin Karchi. Here we go.
Benjamin Karchi. I have always wondered how many reads does a college quarterback have on a given play, or does it depend on the play call?
Depends on the play call. Yeah. And there's always a pre-snap read, almost always, unless the coach, you know, there's signals you can give to, hey, we're locking this in, right? I want to run this no matter what. But, you know, like even with our quarterback, when we ran inside-outside zone, we would always have a check option, you know, depending on the inside. Some inside zone you want to run to the tight technique. Some inside zone you want to run away from the tight technique. It just depends on – you know, what type of inside zone you're running. Like when I was at Muhlenberg, we always wanted to run to the tight technique because we were an under center downhill, just like a gap inside zone. So it was like open cross, get downhill. Mm-hmm. Other ones they call inside zone is almost like a mid zone. And so they want to run it away from the tight technique. So then cut back behind the tight technique.
Yep.
It just depends on what type you run, but there's always, but the point is you'll check. You know, if you're running outside zone, there's certain checks you'll have to check which way you're going. You know, so you can give an east-west call, you know, Ringo, Lucky, whatever the call may be to say, hey, where we're going to go with the ball. And then, of course, there's reads, post-snap reads, and all types of stuff. It just depends on the call.
There's also some teams that kind of do a little bit more of half-field reads versus full-field reads, which will limit how many reads you're making, all that type of stuff.
I mean, that's what a tight technique was. I'm sorry. So a tight technique in this instance is the A-gap player. Mm-hmm. So the tight to the center is what that meant. The tight technique to the center. So if you're in a alignment where there is a guy in a three technique, which three technique is the outside shoulder of the guard. Yep. And then the guy on the other side was a one technique, which is inside shoulder of the guard, or a shade, or, you know, nose, that would be considered the tight technique. So it was the guy that was closest to the center. Yeah. Essentially is what it was.
And usually to the strength call, usually teams just run the 31 front if they're running a 4-3. So there will be the three tech to the strong side and then the one tech to the weak side.
And we'd face some teams that did under, which would be flipped. And then we faced a couple teams that would go double threes, and they would have stack backers because then they could – and they were never good. They were just trying to be –
I was about to say, I don't like that at all.
They wouldn't stay in double threes. I mean, one guy would slant inside. But it is like, dude, this isn't – having the effect you think it's having, but that would make some of our checks a little bit. Okay. We had to change our checks because there was no tight techniques. You just look at, you know, backers or where your tight end was or whatever the case may be and just go from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we played a 5-man front when I was in high school a lot. We played almost just like a 50, like a 5-2. And we used to run a lot of 22 a lot because we slanted a ton because we were undersized and all that good stuff too. Yep. So,
all right, let's get to some more here real quick. Let's try to rock and roll through these, Ryan.
AGM Jim Boeheim said yesterday that Mike Bray has done about as good as you're going to do at Notre Dame. I don't agree. Do you?
The first 15 years of his career, I would have agreed with that. Yes.
Yeah.
The last part of his career, I don't agree with that. Like, especially the era in which, I mean, because Jim Boeheim knows what it takes to get best top players. Trust me, he knows. And it's not just his charm and recruiting skills, but when you look at Mike Bray's, I mean, I would say 4, 5, 6, 7, they were, 13 years in the Big East, and then the first really 4 years in the ACC, they were really good in 3 of those 4 years. Mm-hmm. So I'd say the first 17 years, you're not going to get much better than that. I mean, in the 13 years in the Big East, and remember at the time, the Big East was really good. You know, in those 13 years, they had 10 years of 20 or more wins. You know, so I never won the Big East. But do you remember how good the Big East was back then and how deep the Big East was? I remember one year, like, UConn won the title with Kemba Walker, and they didn't win I don't think they won the Big East that year either.
They weren't that great of a regular season team that year. They just got super hot in the tournament, I remember that year. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, they were always competitive. Always had good teams. You know, he had that niche that he was good at. You know, when he was in the Big East, they made the NCAA tournament 9 out of 14 years, and – went to an NIC semifinal 1 year, and then they had the 2 Elite Eight teams. I don't know if you're going to do much better than that at basketball in the era that he coached. Now, I will say this. If Notre Dame wants to be good at basketball, they could – I'll say this. NIL is bad for college football the way it's being implemented.
Yeah.
But if it's implemented correctly, it'll have a good impact for football, but it'll have a phenomenal impact for basketball. Because what you're going to have is if they do it right, you're going to start seeing some of these kids that are leaving as freshmen now but don't have the game. They're going to get drafted in the top 15, but they don't have the game for the NBA yet. And so like a Blake Wesley, for example, if NIL is regulated the way it's supposed to, you're going to see teams that are going to say, I just got to buy one basketball player. So we're going to come up with some deal and get Blake Wesley $5 million to stay a second year or a third year to whatever. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, if whoever Notre Dame's shoe team is wants to say, hey, we're going to give you $10 million a year in NIL money for your basketball players. Okay.
Yeah.
That's name, image, and likeness. What are they doing? We want to put our brand on this kid. We represent your school. It's in our best interest for your basketball team to be as good as possible because that's good for us business-wise. That's what NIL is supposed to be about, in my opinion. Right? And so, but be above board with it. Don't use it as enticement to get kids, but you'll know, hey, Notre Dame hands out some money and it'll be good for the sport as well. And I think that's where you could maybe get a few more JJ Starlings who are also kids that, you know, care kind of about some things beyond just going to a place that's going to be a five-star, you know, that kind of thing. So I think to me, because Logan Thayer just said something that I've said before about basketball. He says the Notre Dame degree pitch isn't a compelling for one and done hopefuls. And NIL could bridge that gap. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. Because NIL can, number one, a big-time kid will come there knowing he's going to get a payout from Nike or Under Armour or Adidas or whoever, number one. Number two, that money can also help you to keep a kid longer than you otherwise might keep him in school. Hey, do you want to go to the NBA and you're going to make this amount of money, but you're going to sit the bench and your game's not going to develop? Or do you want to stay with me for two more years? You're going to make $10 million over the next 2 years because you're going to get this money for whatever. I'm going to develop your game. And then when you go to the NBA draft, you'll be picked around the same spot, but you're going to be so much more ready to then thrive and get to that second contract.
Yep.
I think you're going to see some of that happen. Not a ton, because some kids don't need to stay in college. This is what I hate about the NBA rule about the draft. Why did Kevin Garnett need to go to college? He didn't. Kobe Bryant didn't need to go to college. LeBron James didn't need to go to college. They were ready for the NBA. So let those kids come. And then, like, to me, I wish the NBA had the same rules as baseball. If you go pro out of high school, you can go pro. If you go back to college, you got to stay for 3 years.
Yeah.
Well, that makes a lot more sense now, this era of NIL. Because these kids are going to get compensated and be taken care of to where if, A, their games don't pan out or there's an injury, these kids are still going to be okay. And I've said this before. Justin Ross is the poster boy for why I'm a supporter of NIL done right. Because that kid came to Clemson, helped them win a title, was phenomenal. He would have made a lot of money in a year or two in NIL. Then the injuries happened, and he was never the same player. He couldn't go pro after his freshman year. Wasn't allowed. And now he's, you know, what did he make a practice? He made a practice squad roster this year, right? I think did he even do that?
Well, he got,
he'll never be the guy he would have been, but he still would have been able to come away out of college with a degree from Clemson and a good chunk of change to start his life on if the pro thing doesn't work out.
I forget what. So Justin Ross got signed by the Chiefs, I remember. And then I think he got hurt again. Like, nothing serious, but, like, I think he got hurt in camp, and I don't know if he ended up making a roster. Well, he definitely didn't make a roster. I don't know if he made a practice squad, though. It's just – it is a really sad story, though, man. It's so sad. That kid was – people don't understand how good Justin Ross was as a freshman, man. That kid was just dumb. Like, I thought he was going to be the best receiver to come out in the draft in a couple years. Like, I thought he was a for sure.
He would have had a chance if it wasn't for the injuries.
He was so good, man. Such a good player.
All right, here we go. Let's got some more here.
From Tyler Binge. Last year, people said they would give a percentage of congratulations to Brian Kelly if the 22 team wins the national championship. This year, what percent to BK would you give if they win in 2023?
Zero.
Zero.
Yeah, zero.
Just because I'm spiteful, but also.
No, it has nothing. It's what would he have done to make this team a championship caliber football team in two years removed from his tenure?
That's a great point.
Did he get Sam Hartman? Did he bring back Harry Hiestand?
Nope.
You know, did he – all these things that you could look at and say, he's not responsible for that. Mm-hmm. So, no, I don't give him credit for that. Sorry. I don't at all.
Yep.
I'd have had to give him some credit for this year's team, but I don't give him any credit for that. So, sorry. He's 2 years removed. I'll give him credit for what happens at LSU this year.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
That's it. Kay Grant, Brian, toughest defense you faced while playing. Ryan, toughest offense you faced, college or high school?
Well, I mean, the team that kicked my butt the most, it was in college. We played the College of New Jersey.
And they, TCNJ, I mean, huh?
My wife is a
TCNJ grad.
Yeah,
TCNJ
we played grad. At their place, and they kicked my butt, man. Like, and it was AstroTurf. It hurt like heck. yeah, they were pretty good. So Wesley was like a really highly ranked team the year we played against them, but I kind of ripped them up a little bit. So I had a pretty good game that day. Yeah, probably TCNJ. I mean, in high school, we played some good defenses, but, I mean, they were high school defenses, right? But
yeah,
best defensive player I ever played against was Dre Bly. I mean, I've said this before. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's best defensive player I ever played against.
I see, the high school offenses, it's a tough one to say for a second because, like, the only team that I'm really thinking about is we played against a team called Palmyra High School here in New Jersey that – they had a wide receiver named Karan Pratt when I was we may have been the same grade, but he ended up playing at Rutgers. And then he was on the Eagles practice squad for like 2 or 3 years. They ran just like this college spread offense in high school, like where they were just better athletes than most of the team that I was on. Right. Like they just were getting in space and it was a headache because they could all run. Like they, I mean, their running back was a all county, all South Jersey hurdler in the 110 high hurdles. They had Karan Pratt that played in the NFL for a little bit. Like they were just that type of team. I think college wise, I mean, Salisbury in the triple option is not fun. Like it's not. Mm-mm. It's not fun.
Wasn't fun to play in either for me. I'll tell you that right now.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I actually kind of enjoy playing against a triple option sometimes, but Salisbury, I mean, if anybody knows Salisbury, like they run it very, very well, which is why they've been successful.
Did you play? How many years did you play at Frostburg?
I only played it 1 year at Frostburg. So I was 2011. Okay. 2011.
2011. Yeah. So that was after I coached against them, but they had some athletes.
Yep.
I mean, they had some athletes in that.
Which makes it even worse, man. Cause you're like triple option is usually guys that aren't good athletes. So if you go put good athletes in a triple option, then it's like a headache. Like, okay.
Yeah. Like when I coached against them, their running back was Byron Westbrook, who's Brian Westbrook's little brother.
Yeah.
And they had a quarterback named Dustin Johnson, who was he was a Division I caliber athlete. I don't know if he didn't have the grades or what, but he was really dynamic. Mm-hmm. They had some athletes, but they beat us in 05. They beat us in the regular season, but I told you this, in 04, I coached at that place against them, and we put in work on them. So that was the one game all year where the head coach basically just said, whatever Driscoll tells me to do, I'm doing. We put work on him, buddy. Beat him 35-24. So.
And when I was on Frost – sorry, guys, finish.
Oh, it's all good.
I was just going to say, when I was on Frostburg, we also weren't very good, and Salisbury was good. And Frostburg's good now. It's weird.
Yeah, well, like when I played against Frostburg, the 1 year I started against Frostburg, they were really good, and we weren't. Yeah. But we played them in Raven Stadium, and the field was a mess because it was the year after they filmed the replacements on that field. And so they scored late, and they were going to go kick the extra point to tie. Mm-hmm. And we jumped off sides. And so they decided to go for two and got it. And then we got the ball back, a couple minutes left, went down the field, completed a few passes. We got in field goal range, spiked the ball. And I think I've said this before, roommate came on to kick it. And it was way worse than the kick from the Ohio State kid. Way worse.
So bad.
Way worse. And we lost. But I had a pretty good game. I'm a pretty good game in that game against Frostburg State. So I still have the highlight somewhere, but it was the all 22 version. So it's like way up there.
Nice.
You really can't see it, but yeah, we should have won that game. It was kind of cool. Cause there was a throw I made in that game where I threw it and I got hit in the chin as soon as I got through the ball. So I'm laying on my back and it was a deep ball up the sideline. And so I'm looking at their crowd, our crowd, their crowd, our crowd. And then our crowd went crazy. And I was like, oh, either he threw a flag or the guy caught it because I didn't see it. I was laying on my back looking up, looking at the sky. So, but yeah, they were a good team. They were a good team back then.
Bobcat Pride, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, we should have beat them, though. If we had a kicker that didn't choke. Oh, Paul, you're killing me, dude. All right, here we go.
From Rob Titoff, Brian and Ryan, if the new men's basketball coach is between Shaka Smart or Thad Matta, who should be the choice? I don't follow either coach.
Other? No. Can I go other? Yeah,
I really haven't followed. I mean, so Shaka Smart used to be at VM. He was at VCU, right?
He's at Marquette now, right?
Yeah, I don't follow college basketball as much. I just follow what Notre Dame does, win loss records. So
yeah, he's at Marquette now. So yeah. And he went to Texas and didn't really do that great at Texas, and now he's at Marquette and he's okay, but.
He was at VCU though, right? At one point,
yeah, he was Smart. They had that great defense. They had that one semi. They made it to Final Four 1 year with him as their head coach. But no, I'd pass on both. Honestly, I'd rather go with some young up and comer. Some give me Sean Sweeney, give me Chris Quinn, one of those guys. Would much rather have one of those guys than a retread.
Bring some energy into the
Some recruiting swagger. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think they need to do the NBA thing. I mean, because Chris Quinn's an NBA assistant, Sean Sweeney's an NBA assistant. So to me, I think that those are the kind of guys that I would prefer to bring in, or some really good coach at a smaller school and say, hey, let's go get those guys and have some success. That's kind of what I would rather see them do, as opposed to bringing in an older retread kind of guy. I just,
yeah,
I just I don't have any interest in that, to be honest with you.
I think usually when you make a coaching change, you have to go, kind of go the opposite, right? Like I think of Mike Bray was like the veteran coach, right? Like a little bit of an older guy. I think going the opposite a little bit is, I mean, you still want to get a guy that's highly qualified, obviously, right. But like the young energy, I think, is what you're trying to bring into the room right now.
Right. Agree. And that's kind of to me where I would want to go with it. So
yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see who they go after. There we go. For Max Ott, got a question here.
Max Ott, who is your pick for the returners, kick and punt returner next year? Excuse me. I mean, so Brian, I mean, if kick returner this year, I mean, Jadarian Price was in the conversation a little bit before he got injured, right? Do you think that you chance that with him coming back from the injury? I guess that would be a starting point. I mean, but like
if he's healthy to play, I'd definitely look at him back there. Yes.
But I mean, Chris Tyree's coming back, so he's going to be in the kick return conversation.
Well, what I've said is what I would like to see happen is let Chris Tyree be more involved on offense, mm-hmm. you know, getting 8 to 10 touches a game in the pass game, run game, things like that. And then let Jadarian Price or Jeremiah Love, like one of the younger backs that you want
Jeremiah
to get,
Love time, would be
get back
one.
There, you know?
Yeah.
Punt return, Jeremiah Love is also in that conversation. Look, I would strongly consider one of the freshmen for that, honestly. I'd give Jaden Greathouse a chance at that. Would be a guy
Caleb Smith could return punts,
that would
too.
Be another one. We're talking about the high school version, not the Virginia Tech version. No. And there's a couple DBs who might not be bad punt returners. You know, Jaden Mickey was a pretty good punt returner in high school. You know, Benjamin Morrison was a pretty good punt returner. I don't know if I'd want to expose Benjamin Morrison to that. Micah Bell, maybe. You know, he'd be one. Christian Gray, maybe. I mean, there's plenty of options. It's just about finding the guy that you trust the most.
Christian Gray was a sneaky good return man in high school that not many people talk about. And he's got athletic profile that he could probably do it a little bit, too. So,
yeah. Patrick Tolan with a super chat says, Michael Lewis from Ball State to Notre Dame for men's basketball. Don't know a lot about him, so don't have an opinion on that one. But I'll trust you on that one. But that's that's kind of – I'm going to look him up here real quick. But, you know – he's 45. He's been at Ball State this is his first year. He was an assistant at UCLA. They're 12-5 right now. He was at UCLA, Nebraska, Butler, Eastern Illinois as an assistant. He's only been head coach for 1 year. You know, I mean, okay, I don't know a lot about him, so I can't speak to it, whether good or bad. But I'd say if you're going to hire a guy that's basically been an assistant, I'd rather bring in someone who's got a little bit more name recognition or, you know, that bring in that swagger. But, I mean, if the guy can coach, bring in a guy that can coach at the end of the day. I mean, that's what really matters. Guy that can coach and recruit. That's what I want to see.
Today I learned that Ball State has a basketball team. So,
oh, come on, man. You knew they had
a
basketball
team. I know. I'm just kidding.
I'm so harsh. So harsh.
Go Cardinals,
you're
baby.
So mean. Yeah. You're so mean. Here's another. Here's some more.
From ND Estimate Trucking LLC, would you guys consider Holden Stace being closer to Alize Mack or Tommy Tremble? Do you see him being a legit contender to start?
Well, definitely on the last part, yes. I mean, contender to start, it may be this year, but definitely in years down the road.
At least in 12 personnel this year, like he'll definitely probably be in that conversation, right?
As a football player, he's much more similar to Alize Mack. As a young man, I don't think he's a lot like Alize, which is a good thing. But as a football player, I think Alize Mack is a very good comparison in this instance.
Because Alize is a detached guy, more of a receiver.
Could
than a
block on the edge, but wasn't a dominant. He was a get-in-your-way guy, effort guy. Yeah. But Tommy Tremble was a ferocious blocker, and he was fast.
Yeah.
Holden's not fast like that. He's a good athlete, but he's not like a burner. He can run, but he's not like Tommy Tremble fast.
Sure.
So Alize is a very, very good comparison, in my opinion.
Tommy
with
Tremble,
a little bit more
man.
Focus.
I remember when Tommy Tremble came out of high school, I did not expect him to be the blocker that he became, man.
No.
He knocked people out in his last
year. I thought he'd be a really good pass catcher, but not.
He was a great blocker at the end, man. That final year, he was putting dudes in body bags. Like, he was,
Somebody just said, because I said I didn't want an older retread guy, that Rob Thedoff said, Dad Mott is only 55. I'm like, only 55? Bro, that's not young. And he's had some health issues, but he's a good basketball coach. That's the guy that was at Ohio State for a long time.
Yes.
Dad Mata. Yep. I'm good. I'm good.
I'd rather
see someone who's a younger coach get that opportunity. That's just my two cents. But again, if it's a guy that can coach and recruit, then that's what I care about at this point in time.
From Blake Kajar?
It's Kajar is my best crack at it.
Question, how do you see the safety position playing outside of the three returners? So those three returners we are talking about is Xavier Watts. We're talking about Ramon Henderson. And we're talking about
DJ Brown.
Yeah. I mean, Brian, into the room, you're getting three freshmen coming in, right? And that's, I mean, they're going to be a part of the conversation. You have Ben Minich. You have Adon Schuler, who are both early enrollees as well, which will be, you know, putting themselves in the conversation. Brandon Hillman's not going to be here until June, so, but you do have two new safeties into the room that are going to be able to have a conversation into the piece, right? Because they'll be here in winter, in the spring. I expect them to compete because they're both very competitive players, right? Do they crack into a two deep year one? I don't know. Otherwise, I mean, you have to start thinking about, is Clarence Lewis a safety option for the depth and the ability to that he has? Is Ryan Barnes an option? I mean, I feel like you almost have to consider one of those corners to go to safety unless you're really just happy with what you have with Schuler and Minich as early enrollees, right? Like, I mean, that's just kind of my initial thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah, I got nothing to add to that, Ryan. I mean, you nailed that. Let's get another one for Max Ott. Here we go.
Under Armour contract expires soon. What brand would you like to see representing Notre Dame?
Anybody but Nike.
I don't really have too much of a preference. Wherever they get the best deal, honestly. Like,
yeah. What I would consider doing is I actually like Under Armour's gear. From what I hear, though, the cleats aren't good. So I would maybe, hey, you want to stay with us.
You don't like the click-clack?
Well, no, not that. What I've heard is the quality of the cleats isn't good. Like, there's some concern that that's part of the reason Notre Dame's had a lot of foot and Achilles injuries since it. I don't know that. I'm just kind of – and I've heard that they're just not – the players don't really like the cleats. If I was Notre Dame, I'd say, hey, Under Armour, you want to stay with us, then, you know, maybe you give us a little less than what you would – if let's say Under Armour comes up with a $150 million offer or something like that. I'd say, okay, we'll drop that down to 120 and go get a shoe contract with somebody else and wear somebody else's cleats. I mean, I'd consider that, but I mean, that's a practical thing. I mean, you talk about the money, but it's a practical thing. If the cleats aren't good and the players don't like the cleats, then you need to figure something out, or you got to tell Under Armour, if we're going to sign with you, we need to know that you're going to invest X amount of dollars in R&D to figure out why your cleats are causing these problems.
Right.
And to make a better cleat. So I don't know if that'll happen. I've made my stance on Nike very clear, and it's not because I dislike Phil Knight. I dislike their business practices and the manner in which they make money and the people that they have to buy their shoes. And the fact that they charge hundreds and hundreds of dollars for sneakers and take part in the business practices that they do to get the shoes made. I have a big problem with that.
I did like Nike cleats when I was playing, though. They were
nice. So did I. But at the time, I didn't care about that stuff. I just cared about what looked good and what felt good, and it was a quality cleat. That's all I cared about. As an adult, hopefully we all start taking a little bit more interest in things that impact our world a little bit more and, we'll get into that because we'll do politics. But, yeah, I want no part of Nike. I haven't bought a piece of Nike gear in a long time, and if Notre Dame goes to Nike, I won't be buying Notre Dame gear. Most people don't care. That's fine. I do. So anybody but Nike or any Jordan brand. What about Jordan brand? It's Nike. It's still Nike. You know what I mean?
That's a good point.
Jordan Schreiber. Here's one. Here's an interesting
Jordan Schreiber. I am grateful CJ Williams did not commit to Notre Dame. Of course, that's former USC wide receiver that was once committed to Notre Dame that is now at Wisconsin. Why do you think Notre Dame was pushing for him?
I don't think that they were really. I mean, look, here's the reason they recruited him. They want another receiver numbers wise. And they're familiar with him and all that. Like, they wanted another receiver. They did not ramp up like, oh my God, we want this kid so bad. They didn't. That there wasn't a push. And I talked to some people that were in part of this, and they're like, we didn't really, we like him, but it wasn't like a let's beat down the door and beg him to come here thing.
Right.
So I personally am also glad that he didn't come. I think I've made that clear. I think it's a really good football player coming out of high school. I just don't think the kid's got the right mentality that I need as I've learned more about him and watched him play that I think is going to be successful for a team that wants to win a championship. So
And I don't think he brings anything unique to your room.
No, he brought more values if he had signed last year than signing this year. Because this year you pretty much replaced him with even better prospects. I mean, that's the way I look at it. So,
Yep.
Yeah. So here's one more, Ryan. I'll read for you since you're the NFL guy. Jordan Schreiber also says, what are your thoughts on Trevor Lawrence as a pro? What tier of quarterback do you think he'll end up? And does he have potential for Mahomes Allen tier? I think he does. I love watching Trevor play. What are your thoughts?
I mean, year one under Urban Meyer for the majority of the year, I mean, it was a train wreck, man. But it wasn't a train wreck because Trevor Lawrence isn't a sensational talent, right? It was a train wreck because he did not have the support staff around him, both from a playing perspective and from a coaching perspective, to be great. I think that you saw this year, I mean, he ended up on a tear at the end of the season. I think he threw 25 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. So he had a really nice second year and really, I mean, massive improvements. He's so volatile though, right, Jordan? Like, that's the biggest thing. I mean, you saw him in the wild card game, throws 4 interceptions and a half. Can't happen. Can't happen, right? Second year player though. And he came back. And the biggest thing about Trevor Lawrence that I think separates him is it's not that he's 6'5 plus, that he has a strong arm, that he's a good athlete. Like, all those things we know, right? It's the fact that he threw 4 interceptions in the half, and it didn't affect him at all. He came out the second half, and he was balling, man. He throws 4 interceptions. So needs to get better, needs to get a lot more consistent, needs to get less volatile. But I think what you saw this year is the sign of what's to come for Trevor Lawrence. So I think he can be in that upper tier. I do. I think he has that much talent. He has the big improvements. And I think that he has the kind of personality where if things go wrong, he can get through it, right?
That, yeah. I mean, dude, if he didn't show that in the playoff game, then, you know, right. I mean, because, well, I mean, look, one of the picks wasn't his fault. One of them was in a third, tough third down. But, I mean, three of the 4 picks were just bad balls.
Yeah.
I mean, just not good balls. Even the one that was, well, one was tipped. Yeah, because he stared down at the thing, the target, and let the guy get his hand up and tip it, right? I mean, yeah. Not every tip pass is a, well, it's not really his fault. Some guys are just good. Some of them are good plays, but others are just like, yeah, it was tip ball because you saw the guy right there in your face with his hand up and you threw it right into his helmet or his hand. That's on you.
Yeah.
He played terrible. Got 27-0. And he just came out of second half. And I mean, he never changed. And this is how he was in college, right? He just never changed his expression.
Yeah.
He just kept playing. And, you know, does he have the ability to be a Mahomes or an Allen? They're such different players. And those guys are so much more.
I think
they
just mean in that tier.
No, I get that. I'm making a point about that. Like, to me, at the end of the day, I still view guys like that in their own tier because they are less dependent upon the town around them. Where Trevor, as a player, is still a little bit more dependent on what's around him because he is a pocket passer. Is what kind of what I'm getting to. I don't think. I mean, Trevor's a good athlete, but I don't think he can. He's not the same. Like, I saw a pass that Josh Allen made in the game against the Dolphins where it's like he's running to his left. He's like flicks the ball 40 yards down the field on a rope. And I'm like, dude, what? Like, yeah, Trevor Lawrence can't make that play. The only other quarterback in the league who can make that play is Pat Mahomes. But it was off plat, it was off script. And I just don't know if Trevor has that part in it. Partly because the long release is part of it, you know? And so I think he's got a chance to be a really good quarterback from this talent level and then what I saw in the playoff game. But I don't know if I would say he has a chance to be on that tier just because I think the part of the reason those guys are on that tier is because of how well they play outside of the framework of the offense. And like that's part of what I thought made Aaron Rodgers great is that Aaron Rodgers could sit back in the pocket and pick you apart, but he also could do a lot of stuff that was outside the scope of the offense. Trevor's got to show me that he can do that, you know, in my opinion, a little bit more. But part of that too, Ryan, is I think you would agree, is they've got to continue building up the talent around him. Mm-hmm. And they've done a good job they're getting there, right? But I think that's a part is I'd like to see them put a little bit more talent around him, right?
Yeah.
Like Christian Kirk's a nice player, Zay's a nice player, Eric Flower, but none of them are Stephon Diggs. Or sure. Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce, that kind of thing.
For sure.
And that's all I would say. Is still a little bit more help there.
Still a lot better his rookie year, though. That
oh, gosh, Aaron, yes. Aaron Ross. I mean, Christian Kirk will have 1,000-yard year this year, right? And look, I think Christian Kirk's still – I'll make this statement without having watched a single regular season game. You tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Was Christian Kirk's breakout season as much about who was playing his quarterback as about him changing his game. That's my prediction. You say, well, yeah, he had a quarterback throwing him the ball in a system that was getting him the ball. I mean, yeah, he had 1,000 yards because he had Trevor Lawrence as a quarterback. It's kind of where I'm getting from.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, not I so much that all of a sudden he was a better player than he had been. It just, he had a pretty darn good quarterback and in the system. So,
agree. I really do love just the perseverance, though, from Lawrence. I really do. Because, I mean, you're talking about the playoff game, but last year as a rookie to be dug in the hole with Urban Meyer and the lack of talent around him, like that could kill some guys, man. Like that could kill
David Carr.
It did not.
David Carr. I mean, that's a perfect example. Yep. Is had David Carr gone somewhere else besides Houston, I think his career turns out differently. I really do.
Yeah. He got sacked like 64 times as a rookie or something like that. And got
hit a lot more than that.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you get a little gun shy after a while, you know?
Yeah.
So here we go, Ryan. Here's one. Jordan Schreiber, which receivers have a legit shot at 1,000 yards receiving next year, Ryan? What would you say? Because we kind of talked about this the other day, right? Didn't we kind of say, I mean, it's really Colsey, Styles, or Merriweather.
Yeah.
But I don't think any of them will be 1,000 yarders next year.
Personally. I think the two big guys have a better chance just because, I mean, again, this is partly because of Sam Hartman. It's partly because of their style. They're going to take less catches to get to 1,000 yards than maybe what a Lorenzo Styles or a Jaden Thomas would, right? Because they're more short to intermediate separators as far as how they win. They're more slot types. Those guys are going to win down the field a little bit more consistently. And I think that one thing that Sam Hartman did tremendously well at Wake Forest is he trusts his outside receivers and size outside at a very high level. Like the A.T. Perrys of the world, forget number 80s, named Banks, the sophomore this year that he also had as well. Donovan Green's another guy that's more of an outside type. So he trusts size outside. So I think that they'll get some volume this year as long as they're healthy and ready to go. And I also think that they're gonna demand less catches to get to 1,000 yards. But I agree. I don't know if I would predict either one to be a 1,000-yard receiver this year.
I just think, in part, not because I don't think any of them are capable of it. I just think it's the nature of what they are going to do offensively. It's just
spread around. Yeah.
It's just going to be a different animal. So we had another question over here, Ryan, that I want to get to. Here's a good one from Joseph Barrett. Haven't seen you asking questions in a while. So good to see you. Good to see you back asking questions.
Joseph would like to know, Brian, what is your opinion on Minnesota defensive coordinator Joe Rossi? Would he be a good fit at Notre Dame? Should Al Golden head back to the NFL?
Al Golden's going to do whatever he wants to do, and Marcus Freeman's going to do whatever he's going to do. Let's just say hypothetically that Al Golden went back to the NFL. Okay. Would I look at Minnesota? This is Minnesota Gophers, the college Minnesota, is who he's talking about. I liked what I saw their defense this year. I do. Yeah,
it's been good for a couple years. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it was statistically was significantly better than Wisconsin's this year. And everybody keeps talking about how good of a coach that Jim Leonard is, and he is. Mm-hmm. But they had the best defense in the Big Ten this year. And I mean, the only team that was really close to, I mean, you talk from a scoring standpoint. I mean, Wisconsin was at 20.2, Minnesota was at 13.8, Illinois was at 12.8, and their head defensive coordinator just got a head coaching job.
Illinois was stupid good defensively this year. Yeah.
But they were just a point better, you know, than Minnesota. And here's one difference is Illinois, I believe, only had to play Michigan, right? Where Minnesota had to play Michigan and Ohio State this year. Yeah. So we talked before the season. Remember, Ryan, when we talked about how Minnesota was a sneaky Big Ten West team, they ended up not being that. But part of the reason was, man, their schedule was brutal. Yeah. And still only gave up 13.8 points per game. So I thought he did a great job. He's a Pittsburgh guy, which I like. You know, their total defense was – they gave up less than 400 yards per game, which is pretty good. And I'll ask you this, Ryan, because you paid more attention to the personnel than I do. How many big-time NFL players did Minnesota have on their defense this year?
I can't even think of anyone. I mean, they have the middle linebacker number 55, his name's escaping me. I think
Marin kid.
Yeah, he was in a low end, you know, all-star game this year. I think he might have been in the Hula Bowl or something. Yeah. They don't have anybody substantial. They actually lost a decent amount off the team last year. I mean, they had the edge that went in the second or third round last year. His name's escaping me as well. He was a good football player. They had the other defensive end number 9, Otoye or something, who got drafted late, and he was a freak show of an athlete. They lost Jack Gibbons, who made a made a team as a linebacker from that team as well. I mean, there's no Antoine Winfield Jr. Yeah. on that defense this year. It's just don't have any.
Now, here's the thing to consider. The caveat to this is, and this is what I've said about other Big Ten defenses, part of the reason the numbers are what they are is they're a little inflated or deflated by the fact there's just not a lot of good offenses in the Big Ten.
How dare you insult Rutgers? How dare you?
So, I mean, you just have to you have to look at that and be honest about that. So you're going to say, hey, he's not coming to Notre Dame against the schedule Notre Dame's going to play and holding teams at 13.8 points per game.
Be nice, right? Though.
It'd be great. I mean, he's going to have better players, but the schedule's ramped up. There's just too many good offenses on the field.
Yeah.
And so to me, that's something you have to look at as well. But even if it's okay, 17 a game, that's really good. You know, and that's the caliber that can win you a championship. But he's a Notre Dame, and I've been told this by somebody. I know he's a guy that grew up a Notre Dame fan, so there's going to be that kind of love for them as well. But and he did it, Ryan, without being a super disruptive defense. I mean, their tackle for loss numbers and sack numbers were awful.
Yeah, they're just sound.
And in great position and just didn't make mistakes.
Smart kids.
And so, like, if you watch the Michigan game, I mean, I remember watching that game thinking, like, these guys, he just doesn't have players. Because I saw the box score and I was like, man, that's like, okay. I thought this guy was doing a great job, but man, you look at that and you're like, hey, they got ripped up a little bit.
Yep.
And then you go back and you watch the game and you're like, oh, okay. That makes a little bit more sense now because you watch and you're like, they just, like you mentioned, remember it wasn't just Winfield. They had like two or three guys in the secondary, Ryan, a couple years ago that were like really good college football players.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, like, boy, these guys are, like NFL players, that was not the case this year.
No,
it really was not the case this year. No. But actually, I was wrong. Minnesota didn't play Michigan or Ohio State. It was Penn State who ripped them up. Excuse me. But gosh, it was the same thing. I just watched them play, and I'm like, you know, you're just watching Parker Washington just outplay dudes for the football, and you're just like, man, they can't compete athlete-wise in this game. They just can't.
Parker Washington's a very underrated football player, by the way.
He's going pro, right? See, did he
go pro? I think he went back. I might be wrong.
I think he's going pro. So gotcha. I'm gonna actually look at that. I thought he declared.
He may have.
So I could be wrong. So he had declared for the draft in December. So unless he announced he's coming back, but he declared it in December.
Interesting.
Did he play in the bowl game?
Not sure.
Yeah, I don't think he might have. I don't think he played in the bowl game though. I could be wrong on that because I was watching it, but it was kind of like watching it as I was doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily remember his name being called, but I don't think he played in the bowl game. Yes, he got shut out, Ryan, and didn't catch a pass, which is not happening to Parker Washington, or he didn't play in that game. So, yeah, Keandre Lambert Smith was their leading receiver in that game. So.
I heard he's a pretty good player too. I haven't seen him.
He's athletic. He's up and down, but when he's on, he's pretty good. He's from the 757. So, you know, he's athletic and can play,
but
it's just consistency. I think he's going to really flourish if because he's a kid that I think can really stretch the field and do some things. Mm-hmm. And to me, a quarterback with a little bit bigger arm will make him a little bit more effective in my opinion.
Yep.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Mark A1 asks this. Thank you for the super chat, Mark. He says, any news on how Hartman fitting in with the Notre Dame players? Mark, they arrived Tuesday.
Yeah.
So, like, he hasn't even finished a week yet. So, I don't mind answering this question. And it's a very important question. A very important question. We talked a lot about this in the show on, was it Tuesday? We talked about quarterback play. How he fits in with the players is important, Mark. So, I'm not poo-pooing your question at all. It's a very important question. But I don't care how he's fitting in after 4 days. If it's great, well, okay, it's 4 days. If it's not great, it's 4 days. So I think when we kind of get through the end of spring, I think it will tell us a little bit better gauge on just how well he's fitting in my opinion. But yeah, so that's a good question, but just too early.
Yep. Yeah,
I'll say very important question, Mark, but just the timing is way too soon. to ask it. So just
as close to the spring ball.
Yeah. Right? I would say, honestly, the end is probably the best time. Cause let them go through the grind of spring ball and coming out of that. But yeah, even going into spring ball, if he's already kind of started to get the room on his, you know, to trust him, that's a positive sign. And then if he comes out of it with that being even stronger, that's a great sign. But yeah, let's get them through about a month of morning workouts together and things and some 7-on-7s before we get to that point in time. Here's the one from Crazy. I love this name. Crazy Like a Foskey. I love that name.
All right. From Crazy Like a Foskey. It seems like the O-line especially struggled in the first two games and the first half of the bowl game. Is there something about Buckner's style of play that makes it harder on the O-line?
Well, in two of those three games, there was a long period of time where they were off.
Yes.
Number one. Number two, I don't think the offensive line struggled in the first half of the bowl game. I don't think they struggled. I think sometimes people look to a lack of success as the line struggling. Go watch the game. South Carolina was saying, we're not going to let you run the ball on us. You're going to have to beat us throwing the football. And, you know, they didn't play a great first half, but they didn't struggle. There's a happy medium. That they were solid in the first half. Not great, not bad, not you know, they were solid. I didn't think they struggled. So I don't think it had anything to do with Tyler Buckner. I think it had to do with you hadn't played in a month, and they were throwing a lot at you schematically. So, for example, they didn't play as bad in any of those games as they played in the second half against Navy. So what was it about Drew Pine that made that an issue? It's not. It's just they didn't play well. So and that's not what he's saying. I think it's a fair question. He's not saying, what is it about Buckner's? Is there something? I think where Buckner's playing style could hinder the line's performance is they will tend to give up more sacks with him at quarterback because he'll hold the ball longer at times because he's a playmaker. Hey, hold it where Drew may check it down or take off running. He's going to try to run and get out of problems that maybe another quarterback will just get rid of the ball quickly or whatever that leads to more sacks. But it's not necessarily the line giving up more sacks per se.
Right.
It'd just be more sacks happening because of solid play. But I don't think Notre Dame's issues in either of those first two games were about Tyler Buckner. They were more about first couple games in the new with the new coach, with guys in new positions, and your veteran captain did not play the first game and was clearly limited in the second game physically. It wasn't the same player. I think it had more to do with that. But they quickly got going in the bowl game. I mean, like you said, second half, I mean, they're down 21-7 by the end of the first quarter. Mm-hmm. And then they outscored South Carolina, 10-3 in the second quarter? Because, 24-7, 17 going into halftime. And then, of course, dominated the second half. So I think it had a lot more to do with just kind of normal getting caught up in the flow of the game.
And I would also say in that bowl game too, I mean, your defense wasn't playing very well in the first half either, right? Right. So the offense wasn't on the field like a ton, right? Earlier in that football game. So I think there's context to everything.
They did have a really nice drive, you know, kind of going into that first scoring drive. Yep. You know what I mean? So.
No doubt. And I think another thing too, Brian, on top of just that, you know, maybe Tyler will hold the ball a little bit more because he's a little more of that magic man, I guess, against chaos. It's also the fact of he's also going to throw the ball more than Drew Pine is going to throw the ball.
Yeah.
Right. So just the volume perspective as well. More opportunities.
Agree. So let's get to this next question here. We have a super chat from Brock Fonville. Here we go. Brock
Fonville. Great name, by the way. How do you guys predict Marcus will handle this season? And do you guys think it is possible to go 12-0 with CJ out, USC's poor defense, and Clemson a little down? I mean, I guess my question would be, what do you mean by handle this season? Like, are we saying like handling the players, handling the stress? Like, I think
it's almost kind of like you're saying, like, well, the three good teams on the schedule aren't that good anyway. Right. I strongly disagree with that. Look, this is how good teams are. Sometimes you're not as good on one side of the ball because you lose a CJ Stroud.
Right.
But they're going to be a lot better on defense next year, in my opinion. They're going to be better running the ball next year, in my opinion, because Travion Henderson and Mike Williams won't be banged up, like most likely won't be banged up like they were this year. You get the best 1-2 punch and receiver is not at USC next year. It's in Columbus.
Oh, easy.
You know, with Emeka and Marvin Harrison. So they're going to be fine. right? They're still going to be just as good as they were last year. They're just going to be different. Just like Georgia. Georgia was not as good on defense this year as they were last year. They had to win some shootouts. They had to win some games because of their offense. But they were still every bit as good of a team because they went on. I mean, look, the great team that everybody said last year, oh, this is one of the best teams ever and blah, blah, blah. Well, that great defense, one of the greatest defenses ever, just got annihilated in the SEC semifinal against Alabama, right? So, you know, I kind of look at it, Ryan, and I say, hey, I don't know if they're going to be different, right? Yes. So they're going to be very good. USC is going to have a poor defense. They had a poor defense last year. Notre Dame lost by 11. I don't think their defense is going to be worse next year than it was this year. It's going to be maybe just as bad. And I don't know if Clemson's going to be worse next year than they are this year. I think they're going to not be as good on defense because they're going to lose a lot, but I think they're going to be better on offense because they have a new quarterback. Yeah, and a better OC. So I think they're all going to still be very good. How do I think he's going to handle the season? Honestly, Brock, it's a little too early for me to see that. I got to see how some things go in spring ball. How does Sam Hartman take to the team and all that kind of stuff? I think all that kind of stuff is important to me before I'm ready to start having a prediction. I think how he's going to handle it, I think they're going to be poised. They're going to be ready to play. They're going to be coached well. They're going to play hard. Will they be good enough to win all those games? Two of those games? One of those games? That I don't know. I think they're capable of winning all of them. Won't be easy. They're certainly capable of it. But, you know, I think those teams are – I don't think those teams are necessarily going to be down the way that people think, in my opinion, Ryan. So
yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Clemson's going to be an interesting one, man. They're going to be an interesting one because, again, the defense takes a slight step back. Is it going to be a massive one? I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens there. But I think their offense is going to be substantially better from the get, right? Like, I think Garrett Riley coming in, having a quarterback that probably fits what you want to do a little bit better is going to be massive. And they didn't lose a ton. I mean, you lose Jordan McFadden, but you still have Marcus Tate coming back. You still have the right tackle Miller, who I know did pretty well as a freshman. You have the receivers. You have Will Shipley coming back. You have both tight ends. Like, there's some guys coming back on Clemson offensively. Yeah. I think they'll take a massive step forward. And again, like Ohio State, you thought that they were going to take a step back after losing Justin Fields. And then CJ Stroud comes in and he's still very good, right? Obviously. Right. So I think those teams will be good teams. I do think they will.
Yeah, I think they'll be very good teams. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So let's get to a couple more, Ryan, because we gotta get out of here pretty soon. I just want to get to a couple more questions. Mm-hmm. Let me see here real quick. I got that crazy like a Fosky one. Here's the one from JP Buelsfeld. Do you get to enjoy what you have created with Irish Breakdown, or can it be very stressful with so many people depending on you for time sensitive information every single day, all day? Is it stressful? Yeah. I mean, Ryan will tell you, I do a lot of stuff every day that has nothing to do with producing content, and it gets hectic, but I enjoy this job every single day. Number one, I work with great people. The staff that we have here, Ryan, Sean, Vince, Sean Stiers, you know, all the contributors that we have, the new guys for CFB All-America, John Garcia, I have a great team. I love the community here. This is partly why we do shows every day, because it's fun to engage with so many of you. And you get the people in here that aren't any fun, but like 99% of the people in this chat, Ryan, are just good people that we enjoy talking to. Like, I feel like I know Tommy Guns, like he's a family member. Like, I've met the dude once. You know what I mean? Because we spend every day together. It's just in a different format now. So
very true.
I love it. I do. And it's why the long hours and stuff like that doesn't completely break me, because it's fun. And, you know, it's a great group of people. So you all are why it's fun, JP. Honestly, it's just that what's the one thing I can count on every day, Ryan? Hundreds of people showing up on our shows to hang out with us and talk football and stuff.
For real.
I mean, yeah, I love it. I love it. And look, there's people that are driving trucks and away from their families. Tommy spends a lot of time away from his family because he drives a semi truck so that we can have our goods and our things like that. Like, that's the people that, you know, have jobs that are tough that people should be asking if they can enjoy their jobs. And, you know, because they're the ones doing the hard work. I get to sit here at a computer and talk football, right? Is it stressful? Is it busy? Sure it is. But I love it. I love what I do because I love the people I do it with, not just the people that work for me and work with me, because of all of you. And I'm Ryan, I'll tell you, I get pissed off at fans sometimes to say some dumb things, but there's also a lot of lot of awesome people. Most people are really awesome. And that's why we do this every day. So
no doubt.
Right. I'll get one here right here for you real quick, definitely before we leave. And then there's a couple super chats that we'll finish up with. But here's one just real quick, because I know you have an answer to this. Bill Walsh says, I saw that Notre Dame offered Daniel Freitag. Is he planning to play football or basketball?
Yeah, for people that don't know too much about Daniel, he is a wide receiver out of the state of Minnesota who was just offered by Notre Dame today for a football scholarship. So, Bill, I actually talked to him a couple days ago because we knew that they were going to go visit him, obviously. And he is, for people that don't know, he's a top 100 recruit in the 2024 class for basketball. And he is a player that is averaging over 30 points a game this year, including just coming off a 40-something point game in his most recent game. Yes, he is very open to playing both in college, right? I think that there might be some situations where he might just play football. Like, honestly, I've kind of got that vibe from him, but I thought I'd ask him, like, are you planning on doing both? Is this a one-sport kind of decision? And he said, no, I'm open to playing both. But I think that he does, you know, and again, this is a brief conversation, but I think that he really does like football a lot. Like, I don't think this is a basketball player that's also going to play football on the side, right? Like, this is a dynamite athlete, really talented wide receiver, 6'1", 6'2", 175 pounds, athletic, explosive kid who is planning on potentially playing both at the next level. So yes, he is open to both opportunities.
Yep. And then last one here real quick, Ryan, before we get out of here. There's a ton of great questions we couldn't get to, but we got to get running. See, Ryan made the promise that, hey, we're going to be here as long as you guys want, and then he's the one that has to leave, right? Don't you
I'm
hate
sorry,
that stuff?
Sorry, man. You need to blame Juliet.
From Jason Rose. Hey, guys, how would you rank the running back duos between Blake Corman, Donovan Edwards, mm-hmm. Nicholas Singleton, and I can't remember how to pronounce that
first name. K-Tron.
And then Estime and Logan Diggs and Audric Estime. How would you rank those duos? See, here's the thing. Notre Dame, if you just look at their top two, does not have the best running back room in the country. What I have said that makes them so good is that they go way beyond two.
Three, four, five, right? six.
Because those teams only use two. Penn State only uses two. Notre Dame uses three.
Yeah.
And their third back produces, like, total yards, I believe Notre Dame's trio produced more than Penn State's top trio. Right now, I think you have to give the edge based on 2022 to the Michigan duo because Blake Corman was the best player this year of that group. Mm-hmm. I think next year the best player of this group will be Singleton.
Yes.
I still think the best 1-2 punch, in my opinion, is Logan Diggs and Audric Estime. And our guy Archer Ryan was trying to get the Ohio State conversation, and he was using Logan Diggs 5.0 yards per carry. What would Logan Diggs's yard per carry be if he had CJ Stroud in that receiving core protecting him? Come on, bro.
Right.
Let's be real about this. Okay. So, you know, but Ohio State's, if they're healthy, will be in that conversation next year as well. There's no doubt. Yeah. If Travion Henderson and Mine Williams are both healthy next year, they're in the conversation as well. But this trio, the duo, I'd say based on 2022, it's Corman Edwards. Projecting into 2023, I think that comes down to the Penn State duo and the Notre Dame duo is to me every bit as good as the Michigan duo, in my opinion.
Yeah, so especially, if you're projecting the 2023 as well, I mean, Blake Corm's coming off an injury too, right? So like, you know, I would assume that he'd be good to go, but we'll see what happens. This is a tough one though, Brian, honestly, for me, because these are so different styles of duos, man. It's like, you have Audric Estime at 230, Logan Diggs, the small guy at 214 pounds, right? It's like those are two big backs. Singleton's a big kid. Catron Allen is like 200 pounds. He's not the biggest kid. And then Corum and Edwards Corum's stoutly built. Like, he's got a thick lower half, but like those guys are both around 200 pounds. Like, they're not big guys at all. You know what I mean? I mean, so it's a little tough for me. A little tough.
Yeah. Yeah. So the reality is all three of those teams are going to have really dynamic duos next year, as will Ohio State's. And it's kind of like pick your style. It also factors in too, Ryan, which style of play do you like best? Because they're kind of different. I think the Penn State-Notre Dame duo are a lot more similar to each other than either of them are with the Michigan duo, which is more slashers and make you miss kind of guys. So, and I think the Ohio State duo has a lot to do. It's very similar to that group as well. But what makes Notre Dame's backfield so good is that you can't stop it too. That's the problem. So
Chris Tyree, right? Jadarian Price, Jeremiah Love, Jabron Payne. Like, it's a deep room, man. Yeah. I told my one scouting buddy today, Brian, because he loves Audric Estime already. And I was like, hey man, Jabron Payne didn't get hurt. he might be the guy that you're talking about right now, you know, as far as like the lead.
You mean Jadarian Price?
Jadarian Price is what I meant. Yeah. Yes. Jadarian Price didn't get hurt. He might be the guy where you're like, oh man, who's that freshman for Notre Dame? You know, so
exactly. Exactly. And last one here, we had a super chat from Charlie Weiss's last belt loop. I don't know what to say here, Charlie. I heard Lyle Alzado was one of the toughest guys walking the planet in his prime. Steroids helped, including stories of him kicking the Barbarian Brothers' butts at Gold's Gym in Venice. Thoughts? I was born in 91 before my – that's a little bit before my time as well. Like, he was
Yeah. They had a bunch of those dudes back, man. They had, like, the was it John Banasak was a big defensive end back then, too, right? That was just, like, a bad dude. I know Lyle Alzado was a bad dude. But to your point, Lyle Alzado was roided out of his mind, right? Yeah. And obviously it had some long-term repercussions as well.
Right.
So
I remember him more for his acting than I do him as a football player, just as far as my age. And I know he played against the Broncos teams I rooted for, but that's a little bit before I was old enough to remember the other team. Yeah. You know, so it's a little bit before my time. But
Who would you say is the baddest dude that you can remember, recall, like legitimately?
The baddest dude, meaning like just the most dominant. I mean,
dude, that you wouldn't mess with.
It's Reggie White or Lawrence Taylor. I mean, one of those two. I mean, pick one. They're different players, but Reggie was just a power player. Lawrence was the most explosive edge player I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And that's all due respect to Derek Thomas and guys like that. He was the most, he had the best first step I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. And then the guy with the strongest defensive lineman I've ever seen in my life was Reggie White. I mean, that was just his slap. I mean, he could just take a 320-pound offensive lineman and just throw
him. I know, man. I know.
It was because he was not a super explosive athlete, Ryan.
It's one of the best highlights of all time is him in the Super Bowl against the Patriots, where literally just did the hump move on that one dude and just like threw him. I'm like, that guy's throwing a pounce, man. Like, it's wild.
Yep. No. And that was to me the golden age of edge rushers. That 80s to early 90s when you had like the Bruce Smiths and, you know, Neil Smiths and Derek Thomas's and Mark Gastineau for a time was in there. And I mean, there was Howie Long. There were so many great edge rushers back then that it was the golden age of pass rushers in my, and it was also the golden age of quarterback play as well. I mean, there was like 20 really good quarterbacks in the NFL back then. So to where a guy like Ken O'Brien is a top 10 NFL quarterback now. I mean, that's how bad quarterback plays in the NFL beyond the top group. Where back then, nobody talked about Ken O'Brien. Chris Dolman's another one. The Vikings had two. It was Chris Dolman, and then what was the other guy's name? The Keith Millard was another one. John Randall came along a little bit later after that. But man,
Chris Dolman was a freak, man. Oh my gosh, massive for the position he played.
He was so good. Yeah. We're leaving a lot of guys out. There were so many good edge rushers back then, and you know, just really, we already talked about Reggie White, but I mean, the whole Eagles defensive line back then was disgusting.
Jerome Brown, Clyde Simmons.
Pitts. Wasn't Mike Pitts one of those guys as well? Like one of the interior guys. I mean, Clyde Simmons was a beast. Jerome Brown, had he not passed away, was a star. Pat Swilling, John Randall was a little bit later, but Pat Swilling was that Saints out, you know, linebacking core. Because Pat Swilling was technically a linebacker, but it was that 3-4.
Vaughn Johnson, Sam Mills.
Man. Just a great – who was the other one? Vaughn Dunbar. No, it wasn't Vaughn.
Vaughn Johnson was one, Pat Swilling, Sam Mills, and Ricky Jackson.
Ricky Jackson. That was the other outside guy, I believe. Yes. Yeah, they were called the Dome Patrol. Mm-hmm. So, they were really, really good. Yeah, Ricky Jackson and Pat Swilling were the outside guys, so – It was a golden age of edge rushers because you had to be because it was the golden age of quarterbacks. I mean, you needed that because of the other, you know,
cyclical world.
Redskins had Charles Mann and Dexter Manley. I mean, we could spend all day, but Ryan's got to go. We could literally spend all day talking about how many great pass rushers there was in that 80s, 90s era. You know, it was really phenomenal. It was really good. So just some of the all time great. So anyway, everybody, that's going to do it for today's show. Thank you all so much for being with us. We'll try to start doing some of these Friday shows. We're even thinking about maybe moving it up a little bit to noon so we can have maybe a little bit more time to answer these questions, but we'll see how it goes. But so many great questions, and I'm sorry that we couldn't get to the ones that that were on there that we couldn't get into. Appreciate y'all so much. We'll be back tomorrow for our RTCF show, Sean Davis and I, and of course, next week we're going to have another jam-packed bit of shows and news and articles and all that. So make sure you're staying up with us, folks, at irishbreakdown.com. Also, the message board, the boards on irishbreakdown.com. And as always, say like, subscribe, hit the notification bell, share this podcast, give us a 5-star review. Check out our CFB Nation channel as well. Love y'all. Thank y'all so much. We'll talk to you again very, very soon on the Irish Breakdown Podcast. We'll be right back.